You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Locked On Vikings. I'm your host, your pal, and the kid you copied off in math class. My name is Luke Braun. You can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. You can find the show on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. This show is available anywhere you find your favorite podcasts like Spotify, Google Podcasts, Himalaya, whatever it is. Or you can always just ask your smart device to play podcast Locked On Vikings. It'll take you right to the most recent episode. And today we're going to talk a little bit more in depth about the Eagles. Unfortunately, the NFL is dragging its feet on releasing the coaches film version on NFL Game Pass, so there are some things that I unfortunately can't speak to, and for the rest of the week, it's going to be all Lions all the time, so we will have to close the book on the Eagles today, but the broadcast was pretty generous with their all 22 replays of things, and a lot of key moments can still kind of be evaluated in plenty of depth. And where I want to start is on the offensive line, something I can't speak to too much on the live watch. It's just kind of hard to take in everything that's going, just the close quarters and the angle. But now, with a little bit of time to rewatch and look at least what PFF charted, a lot of my suspicions about the offensive line kind of proved true. They had a really good game against an Eagles team that was averaging 19 pressures a game. There were 35 dropbacks, and the Vikings allowed 9 total pressures. That is not only a good game, but it's like a good game after adjusting for the strength of opponent, which in this case makes their game look better, unlike, you know, against like the Raiders or Giants, where those are bad defense. I mean, this is a good defensive line. This is Brandon Graham. This is Derek Barnett. This is Fletcher Cox, who got some. I mean, Fletcher Cox notched, like, I think 4 pressures, which is still a pretty good game for a defensive tackle, but the Vikings fared better against that group than other teams have this season and other lines that are typically viewed as better units. And headlining the group, surprisingly enough, is Garrett Bradbury, who didn't allow a single pressure. He had like an 85 pass blocking grade and ultimately had a really, really nice day pass blocking. Now, I still think that the one sack in the game, I think it was the only sack in the game, the one that Elfline is getting roasted for pretty hard. He got dragged on the broadcast for it. On repeat viewing, it still looks to me like he was looking to double team with Riley Reiff, and he was waiting for Garrett Bradbury to come over, or he was expecting Garrett Bradbury to come over and take Brandon Graham, who was rushing from a 3 technique position. It looked like just both Bradbury and Elfline kind of assumed the other guy would take it, and he was able to, you know, shoot right up that A-gap really easily and get a free sack. That's a miscommunication, not a technique flaw, and I think technique flaws are a lot more concerning. Like, we saw a lot of technique flaws earlier in Garrett Bradbury's career, but now, here in, you know, weeks 5 and 6, he's turned in a couple of pretty good games. Maybe he's turning a corner, maybe he's not, maybe he just notched up a couple of good ones, but with rookies, it tends to be kind of volatile, and especially with rookie linemen, like, they do kind of have a reputation for taking a little bit of time to transition and get going, and it makes sense, right? Transitioning from college to the NFL is difficult. It would be awesome to see Bradbury continue this style, this level of play. I don't know if I am like comfortable locking that in so far, but it sure is encouraging. Also, like I kind of mentioned yesterday, kind of fun to juxtapose Andre Dillard, who was on the other side of the field and getting absolutely walloped by Everson Griffin. I think he played like 50-some of the 70-some snaps that the Eagles had. So Dillard played most of the game, and Everson Griffin notched 9 pressures in the game. Unfortunately, I don't know exactly like who he notched those pressures against, but, you know, I mean, just watching the game, you definitely got the sense that Griffin got the better of Dillard way too many times for the comfort of Eagles fans. So that, I think, that performance really marks an interesting, you know, notch in the timeline here in the early parts of both of these guys' careers. Lots of football left to be played, and I think I am going to stick with my pre-draft take on that, you know, Bradbury might be ready to play sooner, but Dillard will be better in the long term. I think I'm going to stick with that take, but it is interesting to kind of have this particular chapter and a snapshot here that we can then go back later, you know, 2 years down the road, and kind of look at this moment and see if it held up. Kind of fun. There are a lot of great breakdowns out there. I'll link however many I can scrape together in the show notes so that you can look at this yourself. One thing I want to talk about here in the early part, and I kind of want to get into the load the box strategy and the deep passing and stuff a little later, but something I didn't talk about yesterday, I just had to cut a lot for time, I didn't talk about the fake field goal that the Eagles attempted. Jake Elliott ended up throwing a tipped interception to Everson Griffin. Anthony Harris was all over the play and shut it down from the get-go. Fran Duffy, who breaks things down for the Eagles. If you want to just learn about football, or if you're like me and you kind of like the Eagles, I think they're a really fun team and I kind of find myself rooting for them a lot, go give Fran Duffy a follow. I'm going to link this breakdown in the show notes. You can find his account. But he's an awesome breaker downer of tape. And he actually broke down the fake field goal thing and essentially what led the coaching staff to make that call. I thought the call was kind of baffling, especially the way the first half had gone. I figured, you know, take your end of half points and get the ball back and go to, you know, try to get 10 unanswered. Seemed like a pretty good strategy to me. But Doug Peterson is known for aggressive play calling, and they had actually done a little bit of scouting. So the Vikings have two main alignments on field goal blocks or in field goal defense. One is a safe one where you actually have two defensive backs on either side of the formation that kind of back off, and then the back guy, it creates a kind of triangle coverage concept, which is going to be pretty good against any kind of fake field goal shenanigans. And then they have the field goal block formation where they have six guys overloaded to one side. You're usually trying to get, you know, a 6-on-5 or even a 6-on-4. And then the other players, especially Anthony Harris, is going to shade toward the overloaded side. He's not going to go be a part of the punt block. He's the one who's, you know, usually standing off in the back. He's going to shade off to the side, essentially hoping that if the kick is blocked, that's going to be a good place to be for, you know, potentially catching the tipped kick. So that is essentially the two looks. And the Vikings in the first field goal attempt of the game showed them the block look. And essentially the pattern that the Eagles had noticed and were trying to pick on is that Anthony Harris always shades toward the overloaded side. He always will like kind of move over toward where the most Vikings are. So they do exactly that on the first field goal attempt from Jake Elliott, and they line up for the second one, which comes at the end of the half, and they are lined up in that same field goal block formation. And so, you know, that is essentially all systems go for let's try this fake field goal and go attack a pretty undefended spot on the field. Another really key part of this is I think it's Trey Wayne, sometimes it's Harrison Smith, but they will be, you know, kind of sitting on the backside of the play, on the non-overloaded side of the play, essentially waiting to recover the fumble if the kick is blocked. So they kind of, you know, stay upfield. They won't go back and cover. But somehow Anthony Harris just doesn't go the way that the Eagles expect him to. He just either sniffs out the play or he's just lucky and he just happens to guess and go the right way. But he goes directly over toward Dallas Goedert, who's the only one running a route there. He's all over him. He manages to break up the pass, and it's an easy tip drill then for Everson Griffin to go get an interception. And they ended up just kneeling on the ball because it was the end of the half. So it didn't lead to too much, but it did, you know, cost the Eagles a potential 3 points and that much more of a momentum swing if you're the kind of guy that believes in that. Pretty cool stuff. I don't know, kind of nerdy. So before we move on to the rest of the stuff real quick, the folks at Roman, a men's health company, are changing the game with Roman Swipes, the secret to longer lasting sex. Get $10 off your first order of swipes and free 2-day shipping at getroman.com/lockedonNFL. So the main point that I want to make today and the thing I want to talk about is loading the box. So this is a very common strategy in the NFL for stymieing explosive run games. And right now the Vikings, I believe, are first in the NFL at generating explosive plays in the run and in the pass for whatever it's worth. But, you know, the league is kind of the narrative around the Vikings is that they're this run first team and Dalvin Cook is having this monster year. And so when you come into the game, you're looking, all right, how are we going to stop the run? And answer 1A, plan A for that, is to load the box. That is to say, put enough defenders near the line of scrimmage, and the actual definition of the box I think varies, but mostly it's between like 5 or like 7 yards away from the line of scrimmage and between the tackles. If you draw a box there, how many defenders are in it? And then you compare that number to how many blockers the Vikings have in a similar kind of range on the field in the play, and then you can kind of get a sense for, I call it, you know, plus zero or minus boxes. A plus box means advantage Vikings. They have more blockers than the Eagles or the defense has defenders in the box. The Vikings saw a bunch of plus boxes against like Atlanta and Oakland earlier in the year, you know, before Dalvin Cook and the Vikings got this like reputation as a running team. But kind of starting with Chicago onward, teams have been like defaulting to loading the box against the Vikings. And what this game really was, as you kind of go through the play calls and the play designs, was a clinic. It was really Stefanski spilling out his whole basket of Legos on strategies he has to counter loaded boxes. If you noticed a lot more reverses and end arounds and jet motion and stuff, that's one way to counter a loaded box. If you remember back to the first drive, there was a play where the Vikings sent I think it was Thielen, it might have been BC Johnson, on jet motion, that is motion across the formation between the center and the quarterback who was in shotgun. So this was jet motion, and basically it caused the whole defense to kind of shade to that side because that was suddenly the strong side of the formation, and that kind of changes their run fit, so they all kind of had to like shift over that way, and then they tossed to the weak side of the formation where the numbers actually did favor the Vikings. So another way to kind of measure loaded boxes is to split them in half and then say, okay, is there an advantage, you know, on one side or the other? So I actually went and charted out the whole box counts for the entire first quarter, the first two drives of the first quarter, just to get a little sample. And in it, I found 16 zero boxes, 5 minus boxes, where the Eagles had more defenders in the box than the Vikings had rushers. And honestly, in those minus boxes, or had blockers, and in those minus boxes, that's where actually a lot of the bigger passing plays came from, especially things on now routes. This is another way that the Vikings kind of countered this loaded box issue. So, and I'll get to that in a second. And then they actually had 2 plus boxes, and they came on 3rd and 13 and 3rd and 6, 2 extremely obvious passing downs. Maybe you could get away with a draw on 3rd and 6, but I certainly wouldn't call it. So the only time the Eagles like were allowing the Vikings to, you know, spread out their defense, and the Vikings invited some like 7-on-7s and 8-on-8s by bringing 7 and 8 guys into the box as their blockers. And that invites defenders to come in that way as well, which I usually disagree with. However, the Vikings game plan was centered around like taking advantage of that and turning that into a mistake that the Eagles were making rather than just slamming their head right into it and running into it, just something that Norv Turner was horrible about when he had Adrian Peterson, something that previous offensive coordinators have been bad about, something that's happening throughout the league still. Steve Sarkisian was horrible about it in Atlanta, really a pet peeve of mine. But I thought Stefanski did a good job of like taking advantage of that tight box count thing, and you know, the half box count. So say it is 8-on-8, but you have 5 guys on, you have, you know, 5-on-4 on the left and 4-on-3 on the right, and you run to the right, well, you're running to 4-on-3. Those other 5 players are on the backside of the play, and since Dalvin Cook is fast, they're probably not going to come into play here. So maybe you can get the double team that you want. You know, if you just run like up the middle, or if you just play it straight up, you know, 8-on-8 or 7-on-7, everybody has to win 1-on-1. And if somebody loses 1-on-1 to, say, Fletcher Cox, who had a really good game, then it can totally ruin the play. And that actually happened on a whole bunch of run plays and why the Vikings struggled to get the run game going in the first place. But that is a pretty small price to pay when what you get is things like these now routes. Let's talk about now. So what a now route is one where you just turn around and you catch the ball now. You don't run a route. It's just the kind of throw where it's like a quick, like, take the snap and toss it to the wide receiver who just stands wherever they lined up. And it's really good when the corner plays off coverage. So something about alignments and the way that the Eagles were playing defense, they actually were using a lot of defensive concepts that the Vikings use. Copycat league. But I know the Vikings got this from Michigan State, which popularized a lot of their concepts when Trey Waynes was at Michigan State. Maybe there's a connection there. But the point is, when you have a loaded box, when you have a bunch of players all crowded around the line of scrimmage, you have to play some defensive backs in off coverage, in very, very soft, you know, way back, you know, stand 9 yards away from the wide receiver. Because if you have everybody too far up, you're way too susceptible to deep routes, and, well, you wouldn't want them crushing you deep down the field, now would you? That would just be tragic to see and watch happen to the Eagles. So, you know, typically when you have a loaded box, most of the time you need to have corners that, like, you can't have your corners be playing, like, this really tight, aggressive press. You need at least somebody to play off and be part of the deep coverage on the field, lest you get smoked on play action. So on the big Stephon Diggs now route, where he caught it, you might remember, and he kind of juked Sidney Jones kind of out of his shoes. He ended up getting like 15 yards on, I want to say it was like 2nd and 10, it might have been 1st and 10, but it was like this pretty big play on the second drive. Well, Sidney Jones lined up like 11 yards off the ball in there, and it was an 8-on-8 box. So essentially what you're doing is you're inviting the defense to line up and crowd around the line of scrimmage in the middle of the field, and then you're actually making the part of the play that matters 1-on-1 on the outside with no other defenders that matter. It's a really good way of making players like Fletcher Cox or Brandon Graham, you know, completely irrelevant on the play, because all Kirk is doing is he's taking a snap, he's setting his feet, and he's throwing immediately as fast as he can. No pass rush is going to get to him because the ball is out pretty much in like a half a second. This is actually something that teams do against the Vikings a lot because of the pressure problems that the Vikings impose. This is also a good way to, like, you know, invalidate having Dakota Dozier and Rashad Hill in on your offensive line, which is something the Vikings had to deal with for most of the game. there's actually a lot of really simple route concepts that are available to you if there is a loaded box. And one of the most frustrating things about play calling in the last few years for the Vikings is, you know, when they have, especially in the Adrian Peterson days when they had the loaded box, you know, they had quarterbacks like Christian Ponder who couldn't execute these particularly simple route concepts, and it seemed like they were just on the cusp of really, really breaking games open, but like they had Christian Ponder, so they couldn't do it. Slant flat is another really, really good one, because if you have a loaded box, and especially like a play action slant type play, like an RPO, you know, you can suck the linebackers up to give yourself room to throw the slant over them. And if the linebacker doesn't get sucked up, you always have the flat route that'll probably be there anyways, because all the defenders have sucked themselves into the middle of the field, and it'll be a foot race to the outside. And when it's a foot race to the outside, my money's on Dalvin Cook most of the time. They also used a ton of reverses and end arounds. I think they actually called two different reverses, and they had an end around to Thielen. They had a bunch of trickery back there that now is going to be on tape for every defense to like worry about. And guess what? Rollouts are going to be really weird now, and you can like fake end around motion, and defenses for a couple weeks here are probably going to respect it because you went and put it on tape and you got good plays out of it. So you like kind of send a message to your next few opponents, hey, respect this or pay the price. That's a really good thing that Kevin Stefanski can now like utilize moving forward if he has the chops to do so. And right now it's looking like he has the chops to do so. It's actually hard. Somebody actually asked, you know, who had a better game, Stefanski or Cousins? And I honestly don't know. They both were really good. That's a tough question to answer, and it's a good question to have to grapple with. Real quick, before I move on to some other stuff, I wanted to correct the record on a couple of things that I said yesterday. I got a couple of coverages wrong. Just on my like live viewing, I mistook the cover one that the Vikings played on the first Eagles touchdown, the one to Miles Sanders, that long one. I thought I saw cover three on that play. I went back and looked again. I was wrong. It was cover one. The difference, the important part is that it's middle of the field closed, so everything I said about that running back wheel up the seam still applies. The difference is that a cover three is typically a zone look, and that means that corners are usually going to play a deep third instead of just man-to-man with the right wide receiver across from them. And in cover one, the cornerbacks are playing man-to-man with the guy across from them, no matter what that guy runs. So it's going to, you know, kind of play out a little bit differently. But the important part is that when you have a middle-of-the-field closed look, that means that there's, you know, a defender in the middle taking away posts and stuff. A seam route usually is pretty good, and especially a running back seam route that's typically going to be carried by like a linebacker or somebody else that's going to be like not very well matched against a guy like Miles Sanders, which is why it was a good play call. I also just made an error in sequencing when I was describing the two long bomb digs touchdowns, which I actually want to talk about up next here. I think I said something like there was a three and out, and then they like went back and it was like the play after. It wasn't quite that dramatic. That was, if you remember, the Vikings got that long bomb digs touchdown, and then the Eagles actually had a drive going, and then they went for it on a fourth and two, and it was incomplete with Trey Waynes in pretty good coverage, I thought. You might call it a drop. I thought it was you know, a cornerback in good trail position made it a difficult throw, and the linebacker was in a good position too, taking away the throwing lane to lead it like Carson Wentz wanted to. So I do think that it was partially good defense, although better execution probably could have converted. But I digress. That was a fourth and two. That was that went unconverted, and then the Vikings took a play action shot right away, again on either the first or second play, and after that, and that was the second long bomb digs touchdown. Same back-breaking nature in spirit, the things I was talking about. I don't take any of that back. I just wanted to clear the record because I screwed up some of the details. I want to make sure I get that right. I also just want to confirm about those two digs touchdowns, the two big long ones, the kind of back-to-back. That one seemed to be a genuinely busted coverage, that the Eagles, you know, it was more about the Eagles messing up than it was about the Vikings, like, you know, getting them with their, you know, with their pants down or whatever, catching them flat-footed. It seemed like a safety made an error on a couple different occasions. There was a third and 13, kind of the clutchest moment of the game for me, for the whole offense. I don't know if it's the best Kirk throw. I think the best Kirk throw was probably the third digs touchdown, the one in the back of the end zone, but it was definitely a clutch moment. It was third and 13 on the opening drive. This is a tone-setting moment. You know, they had a rough couple of plays going up to that, and you go just turn it around on a beautiful deep in to Thielen. The safety, Rodney McLeod, was jumping the route. I asked, I was like, well, you know, what is it look like the safety's doing here? Again, the broadcast allowed us to see that one in time from the quarterback's point of view. So you could see the safety like trying to jump the route. And I was like, what in the world is going on? A couple people pointed out like, hey, you know, a curl route is pretty common there, and he's probably trying to jump what he thought was going to be a curl route, and it turned out to be an in, and he had given up his positioning. And kind of as is the story for the Eagles in this game, you know, a lot of it is just the Eagles gambling on what they thought was going to happen and losing because the Vikings just aren't as predictable as they've been in past years. And on the second Diggs touchdown, it was kind of a similar mistake of miscommunication of the safety not doing the right thing. Rasul Douglas just sits down in a shallow zone coverage, thinking that, you know, okay, Diggs's route is going deep, it's going to be the safety's problem, and then he looks back, he sees no safety is there, but it's too late. He's got like 9 steps on Douglas, and it's just a matter of Cousins landing the ball in any sort of reasonable placement. He actually placed it pretty perfectly, and good coverage might not have even helped, but it was clearly a coverage bust. The first long Diggs touchdown, the deep post, that one was just a good counter play call. The Eagles were in a quarters coverage, not unlike a quarters coverage that the Vikings use all the time, that same Michigan State thing I mentioned earlier and on yesterday's episode, and that particular route concept just puts the safety in conflict. He either has to let a crosser be a deep crosser be caught or a deep post be caught for a touchdown. There's no winning there. The only way the defense wins there is if they get pressure on Cousins, which they didn't on that one because it was stapled to a rollout. Really cool play design, and you know, hats off to Stefanski for calling a really, really good game. Not only just like smart play designs, but deployed in a really, really intelligent way to counter exactly what you thought the Eagles were going to do based on how the Bears and Giants have attacked you, based on how the Falcons and Raiders failed to attack you, and even the Packers to a certain degree. It showed a very like anticipatory way of thinking about the game, which I think might be the most encouraging thing about the game to me, that you could tell that Stefanski wasn't just thinking about, okay, who do we want to be? What's our identity? No, they were thinking, what's the defense going to do here? And how am I going to call stuff that counters it? And that, I think, is the way that offensive coordinators should think, instead of saying, you know, we're going to be a passing team, we're going to be a running team, we're going to run read option and impose our will. No, he was thinking kind of reactionary almost. He was thinking, all right, what's the defense going to do? And what's in my toolbox here that can take care of it? They're going to load the box. All right, we're going to run now routes. We're going to run, you know, bootlegs and rollouts. And if the defensive end starts crashing upfield against our rollouts like they have in the past, we're going to start running screens and we're going to start running, you know, there was a flip to BC Johnson in the middle. If I think it was Brandon Graham. It might have been Hassan Ridgeway, who had a really good game. Who ended up blowing it up, but I thought the play design was really, really cute. You know, run a little bit more inside zone when those defensive ends are just giving you huge gaps up the B gap. And there actually were a couple of explosive runs that will be added to the explosive run thread. I'll link that in the show notes because, of course, it's my favorite ongoing project here this season. But really just a masterful way of countering a defensive plan from no slouch of a defensive coordinator in Jim Schwartz. Stefanski was just one step ahead of him. I do want to touch on the defense real quick. I know I talked mostly about the offense today just because I think what happened on offense is a lot more interesting than what happened on defense, where, you know, it was kind of, I mean, it's like the defense is like the same thing. Yeah, they played like all their principles, and Everson Griffin beat the crap out of someone, and Daniil Hunter did pretty good, and Eric Kendricks is a god. Like, it's always the same story, but I guess it does bear repeating that all those things are confirmed upon, you know, second viewing and the data and stuff, that those guys are just racking up a ton of stops. I was a little bit surprised to see that Trey Waynes had a poor passing grade. I mean, he was targeted like 11 times, and I do think that just getting targeted gets you some semblance of negativity from PFF, which I get. You know, if you got targeted, it usually kind of suggests that the quarterback thought that you weren't in good enough coverage to contest the pass. But Waynes ended up in a lot of very good coverage, and a lot of those fell incomplete. I think he gave up like 7 of those catches for not a ton of production. He did give up. He was credited with 1 touchdown. I believe that was the Alshon Jeffrey touchdown. That was more of an improvisational thing and Carson Wentz making a good play. It's really difficult to defend for, you know, 7-8 seconds, but you got to credit the touchdown to somebody. So I don't have a huge problem with Trey Waynes' day, even though he got a poor PFF grade. I understand the guts of that PFF grade. I just doesn't concern me at all, and I still think that I would praise Trey Waynes more than I would criticize him after this particular one. Maybe we just aren't aligned on that. So I hope that this gives you, you know, a cool understanding. I really thought this game was cool to study, and probably easier just because, you know, my favorite team won, and that makes it easier to, you know, want to just like go dive in and drown in it. But it was a cool game to study because there was a lot of point counterpoint going on. There was a lot of cat and mouse between the coaching staffs of, you know, okay, they do this, we're going to do that. All right, they're going to do that, we're going to counter with this. And there was, you know, that chess match is always very fun to think about, especially when you are blessed with certain people out there that are just so good at kind of sleuthing out like the real truth of what happened instead of the same platitudes you hear from some of the more vanilla outlets out there. So go follow some of the people that are linked in the show notes. I will link a whole bunch of great materials that can give you maybe a better understanding of what in the world I'm talking about here if I didn't explain it well enough. But that is going to do it for today's episode of Locked On Vikings. Thank you guys so much for hanging out and nerding out with me over this very cool win. We are going to be with Locked On Lions for Crossover Wednesday tomorrow with Matt Derry. We might end up just complaining about Lambeau Field officiating the entire time. I don't know. I don't think you guys would be too mad about that. But we'll have that for you tomorrow, and then we're going to be all Lions all the time for the rest of the week. So this closes the book on the Eagles game, an awesome win. Vikings are 4-2. Let us all celebrate for a little bit longer. You can always find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. You'll find a lot more of the tape and kind of backing up visuals for this throughout the week as I can kind of get to them. You can find the show on Twitter at LockedOnVikings. You can find the show anywhere you find your favorite podcasts. You can also find this show by just asking your smart device to play podcast Locked On Vikings. I will see you all tomorrow for Crossover Wednesday with Matt Derry. And as always, Skol.